Well, it's great to see you here today. Church online, church at home. I want to take a moment and I just want to thank you for tuning in and being a part of this conversation. I've heard from so many of you, while it would be better to be together, that at least through technology, we can stay connected in this way. I'm standing right now in my favorite part of our church building. I'm standing in what we call the square. I love this room for so many reasons. We've got the huge window behind me that overlooks God's creation and the river behind us. We've got this cloud light structure in our high point above me, and in the window right over me is a cross. I love this room. But what I love the most about this room is when I see it full of the people of God. When I see families gathered together and individuals catching up, doing life together, standing around the tables, drinking coffee, sitting on the beautiful furniture, enjoying some peace and quiet, seeing your kids running around in the space, gobbling up all of the cookies. But I want to remind you that the church is not a building, that the church is the people of God doing the work of God, wherever that takes them, gathered together or scattered into their places of being right now. And it's a reminder that we always have the opportunity to be the church. I hope that right now that you're staying safe, that you're staying close to your family, close to your friends in the ways in which you can. But I hope that you are staying especially close to Jesus. I want to ask you kind of a question as we get into the message this morning. I want to ask you, have you ever ridden in a car with someone that you would just say is a really bad driver, right? I mean, like, stop signs are suggestive and they always go way above the speed limit. They see a yellow light and they think, I better speed up to get through it before it turns red. Maybe a litmus test. If you can't think of anyone that you've ever ridden in a car with that's a bad driver, maybe you're the bad driver. Just maybe. I was thinking back to a time when I was taking driver's training. And the person that I was paired with, the other student driver, was a really bad driver. In fact, you know on how the instructor's side, there's that brake pedal right below them? Well, during the final driving exam, my driving instructor had to actually hit the brakes several times because of the other student driver. In fact, on one occasion, we were about to hit, sideswipe, a parked car, and the instructor not only slammed on the brakes, but reached over and threw the steering wheel to the side to avoid a collision. I sat in the back seat of that car and I never prayed so hard as a young man. I think for some of you, these moments that you find yourself in could feel a lot like that. Like you want to pump the brakes and take control of the steering wheel. Now there are some of you out there that are saying, you know what, I don't even want to just take control. I just want to put the car in reverse and back up a few weeks to before this pandemic even hit us. You can find yourself in a time like this kind of wondering, where is God? Why isn't he doing anything? I mean, if God's not going to do something, then I want to take the wheel and take control of the situation. And that's why we're studying these statements that Jesus makes. We call them the I am statements. And these statements give us a clear picture of who Jesus is and how he can be trusted in uncertain, difficult, unprecedented times like these. I want to jump right in. In fact, the Gospel of John gives us these I am statements. John was one of the followers of Jesus and became one of Jesus' closest friends. And he gathers for us all of these statements. And he makes this statement in John chapter 8. Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I am the light, Jesus says. And this promise that whoever follows me will never walk in darkness. Now, why is that a good thing? Well, because let's be honest, it could be scary in the dark. I just want to ask a little audience participation for a moment. Everyone plays on this one. I want you to raise your hand if you've ever been scared of the dark. Go ahead, parents, kids, just raise your hand if you've ever been scared of the dark. Now, I want you to look around your room there, and if somebody in your household is not raising their hand, they're not telling you the truth. Everyone has been scared at least once in the dark. I mean, think about it. When you're a kid, if you're scared of the dark, what do? You sleep with a nightlight on. And not only that, you make sure that that closet door is not even left a crack open. You push that closet door completely closed. You seal off any chance of monsters coming out to get you in the middle of the night. Or maybe this one, right? Maybe you were so scared at night that you were really careful not to ever let your arm dangle over the edge of the bed or your leg dangle over the edge of the bed because you don't want it anywhere near the foot of your bed, right? See, we have this problem with the dark, and it exposes that we were meant for the light. The Bible has so much to say about the light. The Bible tells us that right from the very beginning, it was one of the first things that God created. In the beginning, God created the light. And then God goes to work. He separates the light from the darkness, creating day and evening. And God says, it is good. There's this rhythm and there's this rhyme to creation of God using the world and separating light from darkness. In fact, God is often called the light. You contrast that with darkness, and that word is typically used for the enemy. The enemy is called the prince of darkness. And so when Jesus comes on the scene in John chapter 8, and he says, I am the light, he's making a declaration that echoes back all the way through the fabric of creation to the moment of God's creation. I am the light that you've been looking for. Now, these words should provide comfort. In fact, they provide comfort for many people throughout the story of Jesus' life. They were words of comfort to everyone who was sick and was healed by Jesus. They were words of comfort to the blind man, to the woman caught in adultery, to the woman at the well. But these words, I am the light, whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. These words were also a tipping point for the people who didn't want the light to come into their life. To the religious leaders of Jesus' days, these would be the words that would ultimately lead them to say, crucify him. I imagine for some, there's this battle between light and dark. And maybe for some of you right now, you can kind of feel with this global pandemic and this national quarantine that darkness is winning. You can start to feel like darkness is sort of gaining an edge. In fact, if you already came into this feeling like, hey, at times I can get a little anxious, that this has sort of just set you off the chart. If before this pandemic you already felt like you had some low feelings, maybe even some depression, maybe you haven't seen the sun in a number of days, you can feel like these days are really, really difficult. There are others that for the darkness right now, darkness is winning because you've turned towards self-medication. You're binging on food. You're binging on alcohol. You're numbing out with media and technology. And you need more than ever to hear these words because, friends, when times are at the darkest, you need to know that Jesus is a Savior that says, walk in my light. Walk in my light. Some of you are thinking, well, Pastor, that's easy for you to say. I mean, things must be going smashingly well for you. And I find myself in the same boat that all of you find yourself in. It's a challenge under these circumstances. But it's also a great opportunity. You might be out there right now struggling with feeling that this is the worst life possible. And this is where you need to turn to God and to the story that he gives us in the Word, in the Bible. Because the Bible, see, it doesn't just tell us about what happened, but it tells us about what's happening and how to live our lives now. I had just finished reading the book of Daniel, and I found it so striking how the time in which Daniel lived and preached is not very different from today. In fact, the book of Daniel was written 2,600 years ago, and there's some things that are just eerily familiar with what we're facing right here, right now. Let me just give you a few, and let me just see if this rings a bell for some of you. Right now, our church is closed. Churches all across our nation are closed. Churches all across the world are closed. We've been closed now. This is the fourth Sunday that we haven't been able to meet in a public worship gathering. Well, get this. In Daniel's day, his church was closed as well. But his church wasn't closed just for a matter of weeks. It was closed for 70 years. It wasn't just closed. It was leveled, demolished to the ground. There are people today that are facing job loss. Well, in Daniel's day, there were people that lost their jobs as well. In fact, not only were they losing their jobs, but they were taken as slaves in captivity by the evil empire, Babylon. The king, Nebuchadnezzar, rounded up all of the Israelites and made them slaves, took them from their jobs. Some of you are feeling this isolation because you're stuck at home and not able to leave. Well, that was the same for the people in Daniel's day. In fact, they were taken from their home and they were forced to make new homes in Babylon. They could not get back to their homeland. And in all these circumstances, darkness seemed to be winning. In fact, this evil ruler, Nebuchadnezzar, required that everyone forsake God and bow down to him. Everyone had to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar. And if you did not bow down, you would face death. The people in that day were kind of forced with a decision to make. Will I bow to darkness, or will I continue to go against the grain and step into the light? The story that I want to read this morning is a familiar story. It's a story of three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or Rakshak and Benny, if you're a VeggieTales fan, how these three young men were faced with this decision and how they would not bow down to Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, the story kind of takes a little while to develop in Daniel chapter 3 because they're warned and then they still won't bow down. And then Nebuchadnezzar, who kind of has a liking for these three men because they, along with their friend Daniel, had gotten Nebuchadnezzar out of a bind. Daniel interpreted a dream for Nebuchadnezzar a few chapters earlier. And so Nebuchadnezzar really didn't want to kill these guys, but darkness always wants full devotion, full allegiance. And so Nebuchadnezzar gathers up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and gives them one more chance. You must bow down or else. And these three men say in unison these words of such great hope. They say, we're not bowing down to you because the God we serve is able to save us. And I want you to see how that changes the attitude of Nebuchadnezzar and these words that we read in Daniel chapter 3, starting in verse 19. It says, then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. Think about that. They were thrown into the furnace. And, I mean, what an incredible scene. In fact, it says that Nebuchadnezzar's anger was so fierce that he had the furnace heated up 7 times hotter than normal. I mean, what is that all about, right? Like, I mean, if heat level 1 is enough to incinerate you, why do you have to turn it up to 7, right? Take it to 11, right? I mean, why would you do that? The Bible is telling us that this darkness raging inside of Nebuchadnezzar could not be satisfied. Darkness wants more darkness. In fact, it's such a dark scene that I thought about these guards, right? These are Nebuchadnezzar's right-hand henchmen, right? And even these guys are forced to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the fire. And what happens? They lose their life in the process. But this would not be the end of these three young men. In fact, the tables turn in a dramatic, miraculous sort of way because of the light. Watch what happens and watch Nebuchadnezzar's response, picking back up in verse 24. It says, then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire? They replied, certainly, your majesty. He said, look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods. Now, don't let those words miss you, friends. this strange, mysterious math of God, where 3 + 1 becomes 4, and 1 looks like the Son of God. What a strange statement. What a strange new reality. I was thinking about how this even would have worked, right? I mean, how does Nebuchadnezzar recognize not 3, but now 4 men standing in his furnace? I mean, think about it. Have you ever looked into a fire? I'm not talking about just an average, ordinary campfire. I'm talking about a real melt your face off, call the fire department kind of bonfire, right? Like a serious flaming fire. I mean, you can hardly look into it. I was thinking, how would Nebuchadnezzar recognize these 4 figures unless the one figure, the Son of God, was so bright and so brilliant that it cast even this fire, even this furnace, the light and fire heated 7 times, could not compare to the brilliance of the Son of the gods. Jesus says, I am the light. These words are more than poetic, friends. These words are prophetic of who Jesus is and how Jesus always is there to walk and to bring the light into the darkest of places that we may find ourselves. I want to give some perspective. Again, I've been thinking throughout these weeks that this pandemic has been going on. Just, God, give me wisdom. Give me discernment. Give me perspective about what's going on. I want to share some perspectives that I've come to just over these past few weeks. The first perspective I would want to share with you is very simply this, that there is a battle every day. That it's a battle every single day to stay in the light, to keep chasing the light amidst the darkness. I mean, it is a battle, friends. I mean, sometimes it just feels like a battle on a normal day, right? But right now, you might find yourself kind of in a battle of wits, in a battle financially, in a battle to maintain or to get employment. You may find yourself at home with all those lovely, beautiful kids of yours. You may find a battle in your parenting. You might find a battle in your marriage. You're together with the one you love, but now you're in close proximity all the time. See, friends, there is a battle every single day to stay in the light, to keep following the light through the darkness. You know, I keep hearing this phrase kind of on the news, right? Like, I've heard doctors, medical professionals, I've heard politicians say these words, and it struck me kind of in a new way this week. I keep hearing them say these words. So they say, we're battling an unseen enemy. And it just hit me this week. This is not new news. I mean, this has always been the news. If you're a follower of Jesus, you know that there is an enemy, that we've always been battling an unseen enemy looking to kill and steal and destroy. And so as a Christ follower, you have a distinct advantage in this battle, that you are preconditioned to be battle ready, battle tested, battle proven. This is not new news that we face an unseen enemy. This is just a reminder of the battle that we enter into in these moments. And the only way to battle an unseen enemy is to join forces together, to stay connected to each other, even if it means we're scattered right now, to stay connected in whatever means in which we can. Every single day, it's going to be a battle. I had kind of a week and really just a day where I think it kind of all caught up to me. I started to feel, just be honest with you, a little down. I was looking at some things in my own life that had been postponed and some things I was looking forward to that were now being canceled, and then seeing that devastation exponentially played out in the lives of people around me that I love. And I just think it was a day. It was a moment. I didn't tell anyone I was having kind of a bummed out, feeling low kind of day. Didn't tell my family this, but God knew. And in fact, he must have known because he had someone call me, and I just talked to this person for a few minutes. And it was so encouraging. We didn't talk about the issues of the day. We didn't talk about my problems, but just to stay connected with another person battling to stay in the light was so encouraging to my soul. Stay connected. I don't know, how many of you, just again, show of hands, how many of you are new to all this new technology that we can engage in? I'm new to Zoom, or maybe you're thinking, I'm new to Skype or FaceTime or Facebook Messenger, video messenger, all these ways in which now we can use them for good. We can use them to stay connected. And it's never felt so good to see someone, even just in two dimension, and to be encouraged, to be lifted up. Some of you out there, you're extroverts. And this is really challenging for us extroverts, right? Like we're party people. We want to be around the people that we love, and we get energy off the people. And you're feeling kind of low. Use the technology to stay connected. Some of you are introverts out there, and you're like, the first week of this, I'll admit, it was kind of nice. But even introverts are saying, how do I stay connected? You have to stay close in times like this. I want to ask you just a real honest question, just maybe a question to think about in this idea of the battle. What is your battle right now? What is the battle that you're facing right now? Is the battle loneliness? It's just been too long for some of you for human contact. Is the battle your health? Is it the worry, the fear? Am I just going to get this virus? Is the battle financial? I want to ask you to take another step with that question. I want you to ask another question. The question is, who are you processing that battle with? Who are you linking arms with and saying, I'm going to go to battle, but I'm not going to go alone, to step into the light that Jesus provides together? The Bible says that when we do that, we begin to live out this light, this nature of Jesus, that we carry each other's burdens. That's the first perspective I want to give you. The second perspective I want to remind you of is that darkness never wins. Darkness never defeats the light. I mean, that's the story of Easter. That's what we're going to have here, Church Online, next weekend. It's Easter, friends, and we're going to continue to provide services both for Good Friday and Easter weekend, because he is risen, and that is the good news that needs to be shared, the light of the world. Jesus' death and burial and resurrection are the story that give us hope, that you are loved, that you are forgiven because of Jesus. I find myself, the older I get, realizing that darkness never has stood a chance, right? You look back in life and you see moments that looked really tough, really difficult. Maybe I'll put it this way. I'm a little bit older than some of the people that we have in our church. I'm a little bit older than some of the people on the staff, the pastoral staff at Bridgeway. And some of those pastors on our staff will remind me that I'm the old guy. Let me just say to some of you pastors on my staff that are younger than me, I just want to remind you that I may be older than you, but that also means that I am exponentially wiser than you. I'm just saying. I'm much, much wiser than some of you as well. And what age will give you is it will give you this perspective that darkness has never, ever stood a chance. In fact, I was thinking about some times that seemed really difficult in my own life and then moments that have intersected with all of our lives. I mean, do you remember Y2K? Do you remember the impending crisis of the calendar turning from 1999 to January 1 of 2000? And we were told, be prepared. Flashlights, batteries, macaroni and cheese, and bottled water, right? And many people had like bunkers in their house, underground, being prepared. And what did we do? We partied like it was 1999, and then we all waited. And at the stroke of midnight, what happened? Nothing. I mean, our toasters still worked, our microwaves still worked. See, darkness never stands a chance. I was thinking of some other times. I was thinking of the credit crisis, the mortgage collapse of 2007 and 2008. And I remember just the economic impact that had on the Rockford community and all around. In fact, the whole state of Michigan. It was kind of an unprecedented time where home values were dropping and people were losing jobs. And literally, people were leaving their home keys on the counter and just leaving the door unlocked and leaving the state, trying to find work in other places and saying, the bank can have it. And yet, we've rebounded from that era. I was thinking of another time, a time of devastation and loss of life in the tragic events of 9/11. And just remember, and I wasn't a pastor at that point, but I was in business, and I remember just the impact that that had on our community here at Bridgeway that I was a part of. And just seeing time after time after time, the darkness never wins. It never stood a chance anyways. But you have to keep that perspective. And the only way to get through dark times is to draw near, to get closer and closer and closer to the light. You know, I'm concerned as a pastor because I've really got this heart for counseling and guiding people. And I know that this time can be what psychologists call, for many, kind of a, what we call complex grief. There's so many things coming at you that it can make you process grief in almost like an overwhelming, complex sort of way. I mean, think about all the complexities right now. You're probably not sleeping very well. You're isolated. You're alone. You might not be eating very well, meaning you're eating too much or you're not eating enough. And you can just feel like it's an avalanche, just everything caving in on you. And you begin to go through what we call kind of the cycles of grief, because there's been a loss of normality, if nothing else. And you go through these cycles of grief. The first step in the cycle is one of denial. Think about how many people were just denying the impact of this virus. Oh, this will never impact me, and it'll stay in a country far, far away in another part of the world. And then you move from that stage to the second stage, which is a stage of anger. Why didn't someone do something about this? Why didn't someone warn me about this? And then you go to the third stage, which is a stage of bargaining and negotiating, and maybe even bargaining with God. God, just please let me keep my job and help me through this, or help me through the unemployment process online. Until you get to the next phase, which is kind of a phase of acceptance. Or as the kids say, it is what it is, right? And I'm just going to have to trudge and make my way through this. But I want to remind you this morning that if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, there's another step. It's actually the step that completes that cycle of grief and can begin to pull you into the light. And that's the words that I want to share with you. This last perspective, that every one of us needs to have courage. I'll tell you what's in short supply right now. It's not toilet paper or chicken. It's not anything that you can get on a shelf or order from Amazon. What's in short supply right now is people to have the courage to continue to step and stay in the light in difficult times, to stay in connection, in unity with God. I want to encourage you this morning. You know what the word encourage means? It means to put courage inside of someone. The Apostle Paul said one time that we should never be ashamed of the gospel, of the good news of Jesus Christ, to put steel in our spiritual spine, and the reminder that Jesus will never leave you. He will never forsake you. Greater is he that is in you than is in the world. Have courage and continue to stay in the light. It's going to be a battle, but we're going to get through this together. I want to just take a moment and I want to pray for you. I want to invite you just to take all the worries and all the anxious thoughts and all the uncertainty, and just as much as you can, just to give them up to God. In fact, I want to ask you to do something physically for just a moment. I want you to take whatever posture you're in, wherever you're at. Maybe you're sitting on your couch, maybe you're sitting at your desk or at a computer screen. I want you to take your hands. I want you to just place them up, just maybe on your lap or on the chair next to you. And this is a sign of just letting go, of just saying, God, I'm going to hold loosely all of the troubles and all of the struggles I'm facing right now, and I'm going to let you just take them from me. And with your hands in this posture, I want to pray for you. So if you would bow your head, and if you would pray with me, please. Father God, with our hands open, God, I just pray that we would continue to have a spirit of openness before you, that at times we so desperately want to grip and pull tighter, but you tell us to hold loosely and to trust you. God, I pray for every person within the sound of my voice that maybe right now is struggling. They're struggling to understand what's going on, to struggle with the uncertainty of their life. And just slowly let them, God, would you just let them just release the grip and to give it over to you now. God, we know that you are the great physician, that you are the vine, that you are the good shepherd and that you are the light. And our job is to stay in the light, to keep following after you. God, I want to pray for anyone here within the sound of my voice that just simply in this moment says, you know, I want to begin that journey. That I want to begin to let go of not just my worries, but of all control of my life. And we call that just the free gift of salvation, to walk in the grace that God gives you. If that's you this morning, that you can simply, not only with your hands open, you can just simply say, Jesus, I give you everything. I give you all of my life. And in exchange, as I give you my life, you promise to give me life, eternal life, beyond this day, beyond these struggles, to a whole better life of eternity with you. That can be your truth and your reality right here, right now. God, I thank you for anyone who's made that decision to just put their life firmly into your hands. Would you give them the faith to take a step in each day and every day from here on out? God, we love you and we praise you. We thank you for Jesus. We thank you for this time together. It's in your name we pray.